I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Boom, 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 boom. So you wanna be a rider? Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the Red Room, we let that shit up off our chest. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. And you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it 2023, y'all. Yeah, on this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. Chris Derrick is out today. We got a super dope show for y'all. So if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get into the show. So today, we got the big sis in the building, Nicole Levy. Y'all know who she is. Out there doing big things, all on the damn picket lines, beating people up and stuff.
People will believe that, Hilliard.
Wait, wasn't there a videotape of you beating someone? No, I'm kidding.
With my parasol?
Yes. Yes, it's hilarious.
It's a beautiful parasol.
Y'all know Nicole Levy, y'all, writer, producer, showrunner herself. What's happening? Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Indeed. How are you?
I'm doing all right. You know, day 138? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, this week was a lot of ups and downs this week, but we all got through it, right. And we'll get to next week, and excited to be here to talk with y'all.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Then we got my man, Rob Foreman. Just realized today, never been in my office all the years we've known each other.
It's wild, like a full decade.
What was here that you didn't want Rob to see, Hilliard?
Oh, see, what happened was...
the box of donuts.
Because he was in the gym trying to get all swole. I don't want to, you know...
I appreciate it. Like, I honestly... It's like I saw the donuts, exactly. And I zeroed in. I'm jelly donut it up. I'm full of sugar. Let's do a podcast.
He's ready to go. Look at him. And then we got little sis Jackie Penn in the building.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Indeed. Been meaning to get you on the show for a minute, too. So it actually worked out in time.
Okay. Yeah.
Indeed. And then my new friend, is it Leah or Leah?
Forgive Leah. Me. Thank Leah? You for asking.
Yeah. Leah Falter?
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. No, I don't mean it in a negative way.
I can take feedback. No.
Yeah. I was just
like
looking
mom,
at the...
dad, just so you know.
Yeah. I just never put it together in that. In
yeah.
That
way. I like, I didn't change my name when I got married because I was like, it's short, it rhymes. Like, right. I can't, I don't know.
Leah Falter. Got
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Writer yourself, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Yes, I'm doing okay. I'm really excited that it's overcast. Just because the title of this was Rant, like Screenwriter Rant. I was like, oh no, I need to be ready to rant, and was just thinking about how much I hate the sun.
That's
and
hilarious.
It's I've never been a fan, but it's fully my enemy now after
really?
This summer. Yeah, I haven't spent this much time outside since I was a child.
I will say I'm someone who loves summer, and I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm ready for it to go away.
Yeah.
It's been hot and sunscreen has become too much a part of my life every day
yes.
on the picket that I'm ready for it maybe not to be that anymore.
Yeah. I literally told someone I am going to be bitter for the rest of eternity that these assholes made me spend my whole summer walking in a circle outside.
Yes. I got sunburned.
Holding a stick.
I got sunburned like a couple weeks ago and I was like, wait, what
is
going
on? Black folks get sunburned?
Yes, we do.
By the way, did you guys know that there's black girl sunscreen?
I've started using that. It's amazing.
I just saw
it's so
good. I'm getting some.
That's I got hilarious. The stuff that has like moisturizer like within in it. It's like jojoba oil. It's really good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
I just learned I didn't know how to pronounce jojoba.
I've
been saying jojoba like an idiot.
It's okay. It's okay.
Thank you.
You gotta put some stank on it. That's all. Hilarious. You see, it's gonna be one of them days. I love it. So today we got a dope show for y'all. All of these amazing writer producers are all Going up for the board for the Writers Guild West. I'm about to say the East. Where the hell do East come from? shut up, y'all. So I wanted to have you guys on the show. I supported every one of you and definitely voted for every one of you. So let's just jump on in.
Okay.
We'll start with you, Nicole, since you're the OG in the building. What made you decide to go up for the board in the first place, and like what's the platform you want to talk about?
Sure. I think
okay, that's enough.
What made me want to run for the board is, you know, I came into the business 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I came in when it was still there was a structure, and you got a job and you got to learn how to do the job, and you know, you got promoted with a certain amount of routine, but your skills were building the whole time. Right. And very quickly, I'd say within 3 years of me coming in the business, that started to change. Right. And I started to see people coming up behind me who had never gotten to produce an episode, any of those things. And those are obviously things we're fighting to fix in our negotiation right now. For me, I know that even if we get everything we ask for, which we all know we won't, but even if we got everything we asked for, the training gap is too big now. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to fill in gaps for people who have fallen through the cracks in this last, you know, 5 to 7 years. Right. And so I feel like our guild does a lot of really great things. And what I want to do is take what we already know how to do and build it out for other people. Right. I think, you know, we have staff writer boot camp, we have showrunner training. We do great at setting up conversations with writers, but we don't do it routinely enough so that we're always engaged and always learning more. Mm-hmm. I feel very certain that, like, if screenwriters could just routinely get in a room and talk to each other, we could head off a lot of the studio bullshit, because we'd know it was a trend and not a just me thing happening.
Can I just interject something? I was thinking about, I've been saying this for at least 10 to 12 years at the Yale. We love the Staff Writers Boot Camp, so shout out to Glenn and
yes.
Why am I forgetting his name? From
yep.
You know what I'm talking about.
I do.
Komodo.
I hate myself.
Is it Komodo? Anyway, I'll erase that part. So
it was a couple years ago now. Yeah, I know.
Exactly, exactly. Why am I going blank on his name? But shout out to them for doing the
yes.
thing. The only issue I have with it is the issue I have with most programs in general. They always weed out somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if somebody got into the guild, let's just say somebody got in back in the day when you could have gotten in, let's say, as a writer's caucus person, right? They couldn't attend. So then they get on a show not knowing any of this information because it didn't qualify during the time when that was going on. And I know you've been talking about for years about putting these programs together that everybody can go to.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really important point. I think, you know, our committees at the Guild do amazing work. But I think too much of this work has fallen on our committees. Yes. I think when we're all like, how can we help our members learn how to manage post? Like, it's great, but also everybody needs that information. Right. Like, we all need to build those skills, you know, even those of us who spent time in post. And so, and I do think, like, making it really accessible. So many writers have left Los Angeles during the pandemic, right?
I know
so
at least three.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know a dozen probably. Mm-hmm. And like, so we're going to have to make stuff available on Zoom. We're going to have to widen our horizons. Right. And so that's a lot of what I'm coming in this to fight for. Is I think the flow of information just needs to be blown open so that we're constantly talking with each other, constantly helping each other build our skills and moving us forward.
Awesome. Let me jump to you, Rob. Like I said, we've known each other for a while. One of the things that I've enjoyed the most during this process, like we're happy to be in the fucking process, is the videos that you do. You know, you really, when I'm like, I don't know what's going on, you'll notice sometime I'll just like five things at once because I miss it through the week.
Stalker.
I'm like, what's Rob doing? What are you wearing? What do he look like today?
Oh, he didn't trim his beard this time.
Okay,
what's going on at home?
But I actually feel like when there's information I don't know, I tune into you to see what I missed. Yeah, like, you really drop game. You know, in a fun way, it's very educational, and you could tell from your business degree and background, you know exactly what you're talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I super appreciate that. It's not something that I ever thought I was going to get into. My husband is a TikTok addict, and he constantly sends me videos, and I'm like, I'm never going to watch them because I refuse to put the app on my phone.
That's hilarious.
And there was just a point fairly early in the strike process where I just decided to, you know, filter information through my lens of being co-chair of the LGBTQ plus committee, mm-hmm. having a business background, having, you know, a decade in this industry, and really seeing all of the misinformation that was out there, and just trying to not a daily video, like, that's exhausting.
Oh yeah.
There was like a week right before the first SAG deadline, mm-hmm. right before they took the extension, where I was doing like a video a day of like, here's the historical context of what if they do go on the double strike. And it's mind numbing.
I'm sure.
So I've kind of walked it back a little bit to when I have something important to say. And I do think that there's a little bit of, filtering a signal through all of the noise that's out there.
Right.
And, you know, it's about being quick, which is not what this sentence has been. and speaking clearly and just cutting right to the bone of like what the issue is. And because I've been lot coordinating at Universal, right. And we have a hardcore group of
people. The place with all the beautiful trees and the sidewalks.
We used to have trees.
Sidewalks.
We had sidewalks. We got none of that now.
For like six glorious days, we had those things.
We used to have it all. It was paradise. Then they paved it over. It would be great if they paved it over. At least we could walk on it. Being there, you know, fairly consistently and developing a rapport with our regulars, because you have to choose to go to Universal.
Right.
Yeah.
It's geographically, like, no matter where in the valley you're coming from, there is a closer lot. And if you don't live in the valley, you're probably not going to a valley lot. So there's been a lot of...
So everybody's heading to Warner Brothers or Disney for the most part.
Or Radford if they're coming from the West Valley. So, you know, there's certainly been, you know, we have public transportation gets off right there.
If you
are close to a red line, like... You know, get on that subway, save the gas. But the point of it is, we have a hardcore group of regulars who are very consistent, and you talk to them in my capacity as a captain and a coordinator, and you do start to see patterns and trend lines, mm-hmm. in how people are feeling and what they're paying attention to, mm-hmm. and so I'll just, you know, take that, check in with myself and make sure, you know, like, hey, this comports with my experience too. Do a little research if I don't know the subject area, mm-hmm. and throw a video up that hopefully shines a light on it. And something very funny happened where some Writers Guild members were telling me that they don't have to explain the strike to their parents anymore because they just had them follow me on Instagram. And I'm like, oh, that's who that was.
I got my husband watching you too, because it's like, I'm not even going to check this out. I'm not even going to explain this. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
You're doing well.
Thank you.
What about you, Jackie? Let's talk about you for a minute.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, that's enough.
You're so sassy today. That's what happens when you have a birthday.
Exactly.
Yes. I've been in this industry, you know, as an assistant first. I was a former teacher. So kind of like Nicole, mentorship and education is really, really important to me.
Right.
Education is power. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to run for the board. So I came into the industry as an assistant and worked my way up. Got staff right before the stay-at-home order happened in, 2020. I don't even know what year we are in now.
3 years ago
was 2019.
I know. I'm like, where am I?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, for me as a lower level writer, it's really important to have lower level writer representation on the board. Mm-hmm. I love our board, but I think that is a gap that we need to, you know, have filled. And I think I have so many people that I know who came in either at the same time or just a little bit above me, and we've been having a really difficult time. And right. I think part of that is getting the mentorship, getting the experience, getting opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I think, as Nicole said, like, I think that's something that our guild can help us with. Right. Because even if we do get all this stuff, there's a lot of us who, you know, I have friends who are co-producers who've never been on set before.
Girl. Yeah.
And that's a real problem.
There are co-EPs yeah. who've never been on set before.
That's and crazy. How do we help them? I think
I was on a show where the co-EPs have never been on show. I'm like, how do I know more than y'all? Like, that's crazy.
Right. And I think that, like, we have these things that we will do. Sometimes we have, you know, short, like, one-time Zoom things, and that's great one time, but I think there actually needs to be something longer. So I want to bridge the gap between the staff writer boot camp and the showrunner, you know, boot camp, because I think there's just a lot of people in the middle who, like, they don't know what to do. They don't have mentorship. They mm-hmm. don't know. There's a lot of questions that they have, so I think it's really important. And I think if we want to have future, like, number twos and future showrunners, that we, like, really need to invest in our membership. So.
Well, can I just interject on something? Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we came out with the Dear Hollywood letter, I don't know if we've told you this or not. We came out with the Dear Hollywood letter right after George Floyd, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time the Guild ever got behind any of the committees. Now, what we didn't tell you is we got in an argument, which is why we got into that. But I said it. so... What happened was, so the letter went out, it went viral. So we started getting calls and emails from damn near, it seemed like, every network. And they all were like, Hilliard, here's what we love to do. We love to do a beginner's program. I'm like, oh, here we go again. Everybody wanted to do a program for writers to help them, you know, learn to be a... And I was like, we don't need that. Mm-mm. They're like, what do you mean we don't... I was like... You guys keep assuming we don't know how.
Right.
Why is that?
Right.
And I said, I'm going to tell you what's really missing.
Mm-hmm.
Bear with me on this. And I'll get to you in just a moment, Leah. Watch this. And I got into some conversations. You know me, Nicole. I'll be going in.
I do.
And I said, imagine this. What if there was a program for ISAs before ISA became ISA? All of us... Rob, we know how to make a project. We know how to shoot and run a show on a smaller scale. The only difference, and I say this all the time, the only difference between a network show and a, like I used to do, produce shows for Go 90 Network and stuff. The only difference, they had more money,
mm-hmm.
they had more people, and their turnaround was faster. Yep. That was it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I've done them both.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Take people like us, before Issa became, you know, insecure, right between there, there's so many of us that are ready to help you run your show.
Yep.
But you think because it was on that thing, they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So now you got, and you know this from staffing, you know how hard it is to find a co-EP? Hard.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put these people who are already running these little digital shows and all this stuff and then show them a little bit more.
Yeah.
Who already know how to do this.
Yeah.
You're wasting all this time on beginners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're the first people who are going to hire them.
Mm-hmm.
Not you. Mm-hmm. You know, anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I digress.
No.
But that was my argument. Of course, everybody said, that sounds amazing. Let's look into that. I've never heard of them.
No.
You know what I mean?
Can I, yes, and into something with that, too? And just because we're talking to writers out there, it's a thing I keep telling all, like, emerging lower-level writers who have backgrounds like yours. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you need to tell your reps to be going to these showrunners saying,
yes.
You want somebody who's already spent 3 years mm-hmm. on set? I right. got somebody for you.
Yes.
And yes, it wasn't in this environment, but they shot their own features right. and they did their own thing. It is such marketable skills, and too many reps aren't doing the work. So write a paragraph yourself
mm-hmm.
talking yeah. about how badass and awesome you are and all the stuff you've done in your own independent work
right.
and tell your reps, this is what you send. When you send me out for meetings,
right.
when we're back to having meetings, because the amount of people I've talked to who were like, oh, I should tell people that? Yes.
100%.
You jump to the top of my stack if I know that you know how to be on set already.
Right. And I try to tell people, because I started off on the production side.
Mm-hmm.
So I was set PA. I was office PA. I was a line producer's assistant. So coming in as a writer, I know about all of these pre-production meetings. I know all of that. And there are a lot of writers who come in who don't have that experience. Correct. And I'm like, I've sat in all these meetings. I know what, but I know what the scenes are going to get cut because I was a line producer's assistant. So I understand it in a way that, like, you have to, I have to tell my reps to say that, like, don't forget that I have all this experience pre, like, you know, writing. So, yeah.
For sure. For sure. So, I mean, I didn't mean a sidebar on that, but that's why we call the Rant Room.
Yes.
Leah, what about you? What's your platform? What are you on?
Man, well.
By the way, I'm sorry to interrupt you. What do they call it when all you guys come together like this and work together?
You know, we didn't run as an official slate.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You know, I took it that way. Forgive me.
Yeah. No. But, like, we've all, like, we should let Leah talk. But we've all met each other outside of striking and outside of, So we all knew we were coming from a really good place and had great intentions for what we want to do. Right. With and for the guild on the board and through a joint event together. And, you know, it would be great to all be on the board together, but I'm going to let Leah talk.
Yeah.
I mean, and I second all of that about it's just been so great to be connected. I ran last year as well, and one of the best things that came out of it was just connecting with other people who are candidates, and then that's how you learn about other great people who love the guild but also see how it can be better and really want to pitch in and help. And so I'm really excited to be a non-slate with you guys. My name is Leah. I'm also a lower level writer. I'm a story editor. I've for money exclusively worked on Disney Channel multicams, we don't see a lot of kids writers in leadership. I'm in a writing team. We do have writing teams in leadership, but I think we always need more. Just because up until a couple weeks ago everybody was saying, oh, we'll never get the proposal we have for teams, and then it happened. I mean, the same way we got, and I don't know if they can take it back at this point, so, like, I hope it doesn't. But,
the bitches will try, though.
I know. But same with, like, staff writer script fees. We'll never get that. And, like, thank God, you know, everybody was speaking up at meetings about how important it was and saying that it's important to the membership, and so then the AMPTP can surprise us sometimes and throw stuff in there. But, I'm also running because, kind of similar to a lot of the things we've talked about just, like, skills, I think our guild could focus on and help us with, I specifically like to focus on management skills, just because running four lower-level writers, just so many people talk about toxic rooms and feeling like a lack of mentorship, you know, as separate or joint issues, like issues that can go hand in hand, or there's such a range of issues that we can have in a room. And I think, you know, so much of our discussions are still about trying to get people to take, like, the worst kinds of abuse seriously, which is not what I have ever experienced. But there's so much space between don't have an abusive room and then, like, well, what is a good one look like? And also, it's so stressful and complicated, obviously, to run a room and to be at any level in a room. And I just think if we were to talk about these things the way that you guys have all said, in a way that it's accessible to any member and anybody who's interested, I think it will be so valuable to be able to think about what kind of leader do I want to be? What does it look like to manage a creative team? What does it look like to resolve a conflict at work in an appropriate way that hopefully makes everybody feel as good as they can? Just to be thinking about those things before you are in, like, the highest pressure spot.
Right.
And I do just also think even people who will never be showrunners, I think so many people have so much more power over their work environment than I think we've been taught to believe. Like, our systems can really value people who just, like, keep their head down and stay in line and don't reach out to anybody else when bad stuff happens. And I think since I came up as an assistant as well, before I was a writer, I just saw all the writers as like this one block of like, they are the writers and they're more powerful than me. And then it wasn't until...
Because they're all at the table and you're not.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. And so then you get there and you're like, oh, but I'm at like the least powerful position in the table and everybody all the way up seems to be panicking about their own position in the room. And it's scary to use up any of your social and political capital in the room. Mm-hmm. And so just, I don't know, emphasizing to people... again, just things that sound really dry, like workplace communication and like what's appropriate in a room and things like that. But I think that just anybody, any member of that room who believes in those things and has some sort of knowledge in those things, I just think could only benefit everyone.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Agreed.
I think there's like a big, and Nicole has talked about this on the campaign trail, there's just an education gap with a lot of guild members about what the guild does and what it can do and the resources that are already there and what people know.
Sure.
You know, I think that a lot of stuff, like I've applied for the Showrunner training program before and I didn't get in. And it was when I had pilots that I'd sold that whether it was like my first one or two where I was going to be a co-EP or after that where I would have been executive producer, you know, and I was lucky. One of my my final writer's assistant job was for the guy who created the Showrunner training program. I had basically had a 3-year mentorship under Jeff Melvoin, two as an assistant and one as a staff writer after doing a freelance, which by the way, like the latter, the latter of mentorship.
Exactly.
It shouldn't just be because your boss is a mensch.
No.
The what?
No. Really?
Well, no. you could have a dick boss, and they should still be able to, you know, help you with your career.
I've spent many years with Jeff Noble.
So
actually, he'll be on the show next week.
Oh, is wonderful! Yeah, because he's got a book coming out. Yep. Yes. I should plug that early for him. Stay tuned. but the Showrunner training program is something that is funded through our negotiating process with the AMPTP, and it is funded for 25 writers per year. And just like of all the systemic things that we're talking about during this strike, the idea that we're only training 25 showrunners every year is ridiculous. It is not enough. And I don't know with Jeff and with Carol Kirshner, not the other Carol, you know, whether they'd be willing to, but if the financing and the funding was there from the studios, we could run that program 4 times a year and train 100 showrunners, and it still wouldn't be enough.
Agreed. Exactly.
That's interesting. I never thought about it that way.
It definitely needs to happen more than once a year. That small group of people. We have so many people in our guild, like 25 is just... that's not even like making a dent.
It's not, and it's hard. And I think if there's logistics to expanding that program, like the same, right, staff writer boot camp, there's probably logistics to making that quarterly instead of once a year. In the meantime, again, we have this amazing technology afforded to us. We could do quarterly Zooms where people can just get on and we get volunteer showrunners or volunteer writers to come on and be like, ask questions, y'all. What's going on? What's the bullshit you're dealing with? And we can help each other.
Right.
Really quickly, though, I wanted to talk about all of us sort of being in tandem in our non-slate. And I think, like, one of the reasons that we all naturally gravitate toward each other, like, you know, I think we all hope that you vote for us. If you don't, like, here's some other amazing people you should consider voting for. And because we're all people who are going to go in, I think, and fight for some of the stuff that I haven't heard necessarily other people talk about. Like, I think there's a lot of us are talking about education and those kind of programs, right? One of the things that I am concerned about, like, staff writers getting script fees would be amazing. One of the education things I think we're going to have to do on the B side of that is, hey, showrunners, here's why it's really important that you give your staff writer a script, because now there's going to be $40,000 at stake. Some other writer on that show is going to want that script.
100%.
So this is why it's important.
Half of that script.
I was going to say half.
And it's like, this is why it's important to still assign that. And so you need people in who are willing to raise their hand and say, hey, we need to talk to our showrunners about this. Like, we don't want to single anybody out. We want to broadly say, this is why this is important. Please think about that when you're making your assignments.
Right?
Those kind of things. So I feel like, you know, I'm confident that these three people would raise their hand and say that if I'm not in the room. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of why we've all sort of been like, hey, let's like do this together. It's less lonely. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I've had experience with you and Rob on different committees, you know, with different programs and things that we've worked on. And so that's one of the things I know that I appreciate about, you know, you two in particular, just because I know you better, so forgive me, is you've actually put on the programs. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you've done it on LGBT, whether you've done it on education or the Black committee or whatever, like I've seen the actual programs that like may have sat there for a while that you had an idea to do. And you too, you know what I mean? So it just shows that that is, you imagine you with more power. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The mask comes off.
Let me ask you guys a quick question. We talked about this a little bit when we did your podcast a little while ago. And I've heard you say it several times, and I don't know if you said it, Jackie, forgive me. You were a staff writer several times, if I recall. I know you went, you were like one of the longest. Let's just talk about that really quick, because people just assume it's, you know, you just work your way up really quick or whatever it is, but not true, right?
Not true. And it is one, title repetition is one of the things we're trying to attack, right, in this right. negotiation. And look, in the way the business is now, it's sort of a double-edged sword. I got held at staff writer for 3 years.
Jesus Christ.
And then got held again at supervising for 2 years, even though I produced the pilot of the show I was previously a supervising producer on.
Oh, man.
And but, you know, whatever. I made it. I'm like, I'm doing my thing now. Right. But it is, it especially affects historically excluded writers.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a real problem. And I mean, everybody at this table falls in that label. Yeah. So it's like, yep. We all have seen it be a thing. I think another reason that education would be helpful is we've also now in this business model seen it be that people are getting promoted without the skills to support the title.
Right.
And so neither of those is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And trying to find that pathway to get it back on. But
Let me ask you a question. What can we do? Because there are certain, we all know them, not going to say anybody in particular, but there are certain networks that are like, on this network, you have to do this many episodes before you move from staff to, you know, SE. You know what I mean? So what can we do to fight that?
I think it's public shaming. I mean, I'm going to say it right here. Mm-hmm. My first staff job was for what at the time was called ABC Studios. It's changed names 1,000 times. It's somewhere under the Disney umbrella now. I honestly don't know what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a full cable season of 13 episodes. My next job was for Warner Brothers Television. And they did not care that I had done a full cable season. Mm-hmm. I was staff writer for them for a mid-season show that was only going to have 13 episodes in that first season. And the contract that they forced me to sign, because it was a take-or-leave deal, according to my agents at the time.
I think they say that to every staff writer, by the way.
Of course. Yeah. You know, and it was, you have to do, we don't care what experience you've had, you have to do 22 for us.
That's yes.
It. Which meant that in success of that second show, I would not have been story editor until 10 episodes into season two.
Wow. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So same, Warner Brothers did to me my third year as a staff writer. Same thing. You have to do 22 for us. They cut our season order. So in between what would have been seasons 2 and 3 of that show, I went to do a show at Universal where I was an ESE. I went from staff writer to ESE because my agents were like, you know, she's qualified to be an ESE. Get up off of the thing. And they were still going to try to hold me to that if my show had gotten picked up.
Wow.
My agents were like, we're going to fight it, but I'm just letting you know, like, we're going to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Interesting.
I have a little anecdote. Is it, I don't want to step over.
No. I was going to say, I, believe it or not, was very fortunate. I was on a Disney Plus show. It was Turner and Hooch. RIP, only got one season. And then I came in to do 4400. It was a reboot for the CW, which they should change the name now, but that's a whole other thing.
Yes.
And my two former bosses, Ariana Jackson and Sunil Nayar, I love them so much. They're amazing. They were also assistants.
Sunil's awesome.
They're great. And I came into the meeting, and you know, it's a Zoom meeting, and it said staff writer/story editor, and I went in going like, I'm probably gonna have to repeat staff mm-hmm. writer, like, because it happens to so many of my friends, they came back with the offer and were like, oh no, we're gonna push for you to be story nice. editor. So I got really lucky that the nice. Two of them were like, no, you've already done this, we're not gonna make mm-hmm. you repeat. So I got really lucky, but unfortunately that's not usually the case. Like, a lot of people are repeating it two yes. three. I know someone who did it like almost four times. Like, that's yeah. it's crazy.
Let me ask you something, Rob. So you're someone who has sold pilots yourself, mm-hmm. come close to the green light, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
When you go back out to actually staff on shows, having been in a position,
right?
Because I've been in the same position yeah. where I got that contract and we're like, if this sells, you're a co-EP. You're going to get yep. this amount of money. It's like, oh, right?
Yeah. Now. And it does not translate to staffing. Oh. So my...
What the fuck is up with that?
I have sold multiple pilots, and the most recent one was a sad, almost greenlit casualty of the WBD merger, where mm-hmm. it was a gay spy thriller that I playfully call Gay James Bond.
As you do.
As one does. that was going to be at TNT, and then David Zaslav basically said, actually, TNT, you may be the number one scripted cable network, wow. but you are no longer in the scripted wow. business. So, you know, just good business people all yourself. Around. Yeah. So yeah, it's I would have been executive producer, and my non-writing producer, showrunner and board member, John Rogers, mm-hmm. Was going to fight for me to be showrunner because I have the experience right. for it.
Yep.
From other staffing, from mm-hmm. Other work, mm-hmm. and he was going to make that fight, and I was like, are you sure? That might kill me. But I would have done it.
if somehow it
had been offered to me.
Yeah.
After that, I had a staffing job, and it was, we were pushing for supervising producer, and they would not go above co-producer.
So, okay. So no, this is fascinating here, because I'm in the same similar vein yep. where you and I have both done a lot of that development and mm-hmm. all that shit, and then all of a sudden they're like, but the last time you were on the show, I'm like,
right, yeah,
I am not that dude. Look at my right. resume, like I'm not anyway. Right.
Just because it hasn't made it to air
Boom.
Does not mean that the experience that I got doing the project right. Is invalid.
Yes.
And right. so, it, like, the left hand doesn't talk to the right. And then there's a third hand, which is screenwriting, mm-hmm. where, you know, the experience that you have in television as a writer does not translate into your screenwriting quote.
Crazy. Yep.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah.
Yes. And then MPS, fourth hand of people who've never made a TV show getting to showrun.
Girl. Yeah. Yes. The amount and you're of like, times that happens.
What? Like,
why are we setting people up to fail or to know. Fail other people?
Yes.
Because when you put people who don't have any form of experience right. in a position of power, it exposes all of these insecurities. And that's part of the reason you get toxic, abusive workplaces yes. mm-hmm. is because someone was not ready to be a manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say I would watch the shit out of gay James Bond. Yeah. I mourn the loss of that
yes.
for all of us.
Yeah,
it
same.
Can still happen. But yeah, just kind of along the lines of like what you can do from the bottom of the writer's room with this kind of stuff. And I really luckily I did not have to repeat staff writer level. But I got staffed with my writing partner from being an assistant. We didn't have any reps, and we were like, well, instead of just paying reps, let's see like what they give us and then see if we have to pay somebody to try to negotiate. And their boilerplate was a 2-year contract with a story editor bump. And so,
okay.
you know, yeah, like, great, cool, glad they did that. And I told a mentor of mine about that when we were just catching up. And I don't know if he would want to be credited by name for this, but he was like, are there any other people of color at your, are there people of color at your level? And mm-hmm. I was like, yes. And he was like, did they get that contract as well?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't know. And so, you know, because he said that, I went and asked them, and it turns out they did. It seems okay, like good. It is Thank just God. What they offer everybody. But just, yeah, in favor of transparency from everyone of like, good, yeah. yeah, what you're getting, what you get paid, if it's good or bad, just being like, yeah.
Yeah.
comparing notes is so good. And the public shaming, like you said. Yes. Everybody being loud about like what networks are doing bad, what who's doing good.
Yeah.
It's good.
Well, and that's one of the things, like, do you guys remember during the agency campaign where they put out the, like, median salaries for TV writers? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why is that not an annual thing?
It needs to be an annual thing.
Everyone needs to know.
I think especially, right, like, I'm so fortunate, and I know this, like, I have a great relationship with my agent and my manager. Mm-hmm. My agent knew, like, I was not going to look anywhere else. I was coming back to her. It was all going to be fine. Mm-hmm. We just had to get through the action, you know. And but I know so many people who feel insecure in that relationship, and being able to walk in the door with like the guild says the median salary for my level is this, right, and I'm only making this, right, fight for this, is just so empowering. Yeah. And like it feels like, I mean, look, I don't know how complicated it was to put that table together, but it's been mm-hmm. done. So there's a template for how to do it. And I feel like we should make that accessible to our members to say,
Nicole,
fight for this.
It seems like, you know how every time you were on another show, like your quote would change? Mm-hmm. It seemed like there's no quote anymore. Like there's everybody is working for whatever they accept.
Yeah.
We all know people who have, particularly at Netflix, let's do the public shaming, are 25-year veterans of this industry who are getting showrunning jobs, sometimes to supervise newer writers who have been kept at a certain weekly that is
$12,500,
which when you think about it, like as someone who said a number out loud, like that's a lot of money, but it is not commensurate with experience, is not commensurate with what the value of that show. And it is not expand. It doesn't extend over the actual life of what they're working on. They don't get that for post. You know, that's like the money drops out and they're still working, they're still doing the showrunning.
And the amount of stories about people who are on weekly showrunning deals, right, and then it's like, okay, well now the room is ended and soft prep is going to be for these 3 months. You like, I know you're not getting paid, so you don't have to be involved if you don't want to. Who's not going to be involved in soft prep of their show? So you're going to work for 3 months for free because you're not going to not be in casting. You're not going to not be making decisions about where the show gets shot. It's ridiculous. And so people, that's the problem. It's like, yes, it sounds like a lot to get in a week, but then after 20 weeks, you're not going to get paid for 3 months.
Crazy.
And then you're going to go to set for, what, 4 months? And then they're going to expect you to work for free while you're in post. So it's ludicrous. And it's also crazy that, like, I, as a newer showrunner, am making the same weekly salary as John Rogers if he's doing a Netflix show, right? I mean, he's a bad example because he's on an overall. But you know what I mean? Like, like Ed Redlick, when Ed Redlick came in to run a show for us at Netflix, like... Ed and I should not be making the same amount of money.
Right.
It's ridiculous. He's been in the business for 30 years. Like,
totally agree.
It's just so interesting that in just hearing from people about like a time when you could negotiate and things like that, it's like that's why we're fighting so hard and so for such a long time now for this strike is the only recourse to change things that we have now is fighting for things with our union.
Yeah.
I really do like the idea, and hopefully at least all of us get on board and can make this happen, because putting out an annual, like, here's the median expected salary for if this is your first feature film sale, if it's your second through fourth or whatever was in that table, you know, if you are a low-level writer, et cetera, because we're talking about data transparency with the streamers. And we have all of this data as a guild. You know, we put out an annual diversity and inclusion report about who is getting staffed, who is being hired as a feature writer. Money talks. And knowing about the money that people are making is ammunition for us, like Nicole was saying, to have our representatives, if we're lucky enough to have them, fight for us to get at least the median. You know,
that meeting that went out to the guild, did it also go out to reps and to the industry? Do you know?
I mean, it was public. It was it was accessible.
Yeah,
so
I don't think it's on a like behind a password.
No,
WGA.
I feel like that went very public because I think, again, in the spirit of public, so they were like, everyone should see this and ask these questions and like. You know, it was definitely eye-opening to a lot of people. Like, I, again, I was like, oh, I looked and I was like, okay, they're doing good by me. It's okay. Right. Like, but I definitely had friends who were like, what?
Yeah. I mean, I remember, because I was still an assistant at the time, I remember that inspired us as assistants to start talking about how much we were getting paid as well. Yeah, so, right, like, it really, like, got a good conversation going to be like, okay, they're making this. What are we all making at these different places? Because we were finding out huge discrepancies at the assistant level, too. So, yeah.
And I think to our whole conversation about, like, the stuff that happens and starts to become endemic, right? Like, when mini rooms started, it was sort of like it's just like, you know, a couple places are doing it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, everyone was doing
everyone.
It. And like Netflix started with the capped weekly salary, and now everyone wants to try to do it. And it's crazy. Like, if we all, when Netflix started saying this is it, all were like, well, none of us are going to work for you.
Yep.
Right? But we didn't know it was going to spread through the whole business. Mm-hmm. We were like, well, that's just Netflix.
Right.
And for a while it was. And then everyone else was like, okay, if that's what they're getting away with. And so, like, the more information we're all sharing with each other, the more we can put our hand up before the next negotiation to be like, problem, mm-hmm. problem.
Let me ask you guys something. So, you guys, some of you guys know Mark Blutman, mm-hmm. showrunner. So, Mark said, he said it on my show too. He said something about, he blames the agents and managers for accepting these jobs because he thinks they knew it was coming. For example, what was it, the last time we did the big negotiation, and like, what was it, the next day they finally dropped everything? I think you talked about it in one of your spiels. It was something about, forgive me.
Like back in 2020 or?
Maybe it was the other one, the 2017? Back 2007.
Yeah.
It was something about the streaming. Like the very next day they dropped something that they
Like the existence of Hulu, where in the 2007-2008 strike, you know, it was like, there's nobody in the internet. And, and then the moment we signed a deal that, you know, to topics that are debunked rumors, you know, you know, back then, evidently, there was like a little bit of a fomented showrunner rebellion. And we signed a deal one way or the other. Right. And then the next day, Hulu exists. And now it's worth $30 billion.
Right. But there's no money in streaming.
But there's no money in streaming. Right. Even now, 15 years later, there's no money for workers. Right. But it's worth $30 billion.
So my point, sorry to keep you at that. Yeah. I apologize. So my point with that is, it's the same thing now with the mini rooms.
Always.
Mm-hmm. His theory is, this was a test for like the last 5 or 7 years. They were like, let's see, does this mini room thing work? It works. We've knocked out all these people. We've saved all this money. Yep. We've done all these things, you know what I mean? So he's like, we should be blaming our agents and stuff for accepting this crap. You know what I mean? Go ahead.
No. I was going to say, by the way, like the fact that they're raising the prices of Hulu and Disney Plus while we're on strike.
Crazy.
I was like, but there's no money in it? Like, you're that confident? There's not, like, okay.
The audacity.
It's the audacity.
I think Hulu is going up to, like, is it like $18?
$18.
And I was like, what do you have that I'm paying $18 for?
I know. I will say this because I, you know, there's a lot of people who were not in support of the agency action. Yeah. A lot of people who were. I do think that there is probably some truth in the idea that packaging did compel some people to not care about the trickle down of all of that stuff.
Right.
I think there were other things that, you know, we lost in that action that some people have pointed out to me that now I'm like, oh, that might have been valuable. Like the, you know, the audits and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, again, is part of having that transparency now of, this is the minimum you should be making, like, you know, that's above scale. This is what, because now that's not an incentive. So, like, I don't feel like, I mean, again, I don't really have to have those conversations. But, like, if I wasn't sure my agent was fighting for me, I'd be like, this is the bare minimum I'm going to accept. So you need to just tell them that right off the board.
Yeah. I think it's also with the packaging things, not to make this about the agency stuff, you know, the packaging provisions sunsetted in July of 2022 because of how long it took to get CAA and then WME to sign. So before the strike.
Is that when the sun comes out? What is that?
Oh, so it's basically, so it's like, so, yes, let me,
he's such a business,
let me break it down. Yeah, sunset provision, sunset
like
clause.
Because everyone knows
sunset
what
Sunset Boulevard.
We're all of a sudden on secession and shit. He's using these words.
It was the pictures that got small. So basically, packaging was allowed to continue because of the terms of the deals. Even though we signed with WME, I want to say, sometime in like early 2021, and the agency actually was done, the actual like, hey, you need to change your business model by X date, that X date was July of 2022. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the strike starting the beginning of May of 2023, that's under a year to actually feel the effects of this big thing that we did 4 years ago.
Exactly.
So it is a little bit of a TBD of did it do what we thought it was going to do? Yeah. We know it didn't do everything that we hoped it would do, particularly for staffing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, low-level and mid-level opportunity and compensation. Yeah. And that's, you know, systemic stuff that obviously we're talking about with the studios.
To continue to make this about the agency campaign, I have a little, like, piece of goss that people always seem surprised when I say, so I just, like, want to say it on a podcast. But and maybe that's too much build-up. Maybe it's not. I don't know that it's that exciting. But I, around the time the agency campaign started, my writing partner and I got drinks with somebody who went to the same school as us and was now a new, I think just assistant or maybe junior agent by that time at CAA, but just like new to things enough that I think she didn't know she shouldn't say this to us, but she was like, oh yeah, like nobody I work with wants to hire kids writers because there's no way to package that. Like there's no packaging money.
Exactly.
In it.
Right.
So it was like, oh my God, you just said out loud, like why we felt completely ignored by reps even after getting ourselves staffed. Yeah. So yeah, it was just like, no, it's, for any doubters, it's like, yeah.
I mean, I was an agency assistant back in when I first moved out to LA in 2006. I was at ICM for a year. It was a tumultuous year, but like on my boss's computer was a post-it note that said 3310.
3310.
Which was the packaging provisions. Like it was just, it needed to be a constant visual reminder.
Wow.
Oh. It was ingrained in that system. But like, we aren't talking about the agency.
I know.
I do want to talk about mini rooms a little bit.
Let's get it.
Though, because I like, so again, business background. The pilot development system is really expensive. And I don't hate the idea of like you as a writer selling a concept somewhere and them hiring a writer's room that employs 5, 8, 10, however many writers to write a season of television if it's the same cost as making a pilot that never goes. Mm. Like, I do think that there is an argument to be made for it, but the way that they're doing it now is everyone is down to minimums. Minimum is the same if you are a 15-year co-EP as a story editor. Mm. That's wrong because those two people should not be fighting for the same pool of money and the same amount of jobs. And, you know, of course, it sucks if you work on something and it doesn't get made or it doesn't go to air. Like, that's part of the risk. But I do, again, this is probably on the more controversial side. Like, I think as like a, hey, is this a good business idea? I don't think it's necessarily the worst one. I just think that the limitations that they put on it by working everyone to scale instead of paying them their quotes, paying them what they're worth, paying them for their experience, and by doing that, flattening the experience system, that's what fucked things up.
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
So are you saying, for example, sorry to interrupt you, Nicole, are you saying, for example, if a pilot cost $10 million to do, you could have invested that in the room? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, I mean, a $10 million pilot that never sees the light of day is a lot of money for these companies to spend. A huge investment, eight figures. A 20-week room for eight writers is not $10 million.
No.
Yeah.
And then they would know, you know, if they want to move forward.
What they are from doing
You know?
Exactly. Like, check this out. Like, we discovered, and I'm sure you've done this on your shows too, because we were trying to decide. We staffed two shows, right? One was in production while I was working with Ben, and what we discovered was, if we were going to put one of the, we were gonna, like, is one room going to be in person and the other one going to be online? It was $500,000. That was the difference.
Wow.
That was the difference. We had to really convince them that we needed to be in the room eventually, but that was the price.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No. I agree with you that they're in a non-abusive methodology, right? That there is logic to them. Mm-hmm. I think that's why people didn't, the alarm bells didn't go off in the beginning, because it was like, okay, like, this is a way to do this amazing thing. It's the, you know, everybody gets ejected after 20 weeks. Oh, we're going to rewrite everything. We're going to bring in a new crop of writers and they're going to work 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. And like, and that whole thing.
And we're going to separate it from the production experience, from the post-production experience.
We're going to expect the showrunner to do everything by themselves. Like, it's all of that crap. Yeah. That's like, and so that's the thing, right? That's what we're fighting to, like, if this is your business model, then it has to be a business model that works for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And they have not cared that it doesn't work for us even a little bit, you know? And I mean, we've talked about before, the first show that I was on that was sort of that system was my first Netflix show. Mm-hmm. And they expected my showrunner to go to Ireland alone, prep an entire series, and supervise 6 episodes. While, P.S., when he left to go to Ireland, we still hadn't written the finale because threw out the whole back half of our season.
Oh, my God.
So we were rewriting everything. So then I worked for 2 months here rewriting, and then went there for two months. And Brian will still tell you, like, thank God you were there. Thank God you were there. Like, it's too much work to expect any one human being to do.
Yeah. Right.
And so it's terrible because of how lower level writers and mid level writers are losing out on opportunity because the mini room is so stressful. And so people make them top heavy because they got to get the work done and they want to not have to rewrite everything, you know.
And it costs the same amount of money.
And it costs the same amount of money.
Yep.
And it's just like, so you're losing opportunity. You're working your showrunners to the bone. And then you want to, like, be like on a whim, like, you know what, we've decided the show should take place in like Russia instead of Vancouver. Like, what? No. Like, that's not, no. The one thing I wanted to piggyback on that too, because even if we were to fix this system and the mini rooms became a working model of what we need them to be, it's again another place where I think we have to do some reach out to our showrunners. And sort of remind folks, because look, there's showrunners who are great about this, showrunners who are not. A lot of you started as staff writers.
Yep.
Someone took the time to bring you in the room knowing you didn't know how to do the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you owe that back to somebody. Mm-hmm. And P.S., you don't have to be their mentor. Hire a co-EP who's good at mentoring and be like, you're in charge of the babies. Go with God.
Classic room mom.
You know, it's like, that's all you got to do. Like, it doesn't have to fall on you.
Right.
You have to just make the right hire so that someone else is babysitting.
Yeah, that would be my only thing. I mean, besides not being, you know, compensating writers appropriately, is that it's been shutting out lower level writers, right? So in the time leading up to the strike, every room was like, oh, well, you're not a staff writer. Oh, no, you're too much money. Because I, you know, would be going for executive story editor. They're like, oh, you're too much. And I'm like, wait, what do you mean I'm too much money? I'm not too much. Yeah, you're too much money.
I'm here to tell you, it's in the budget.
Yeah, so that's, I kept hearing that, and they're like, well, no, either they're looking for upper level or they're looking for maybe one staff writer. So if we were going to continue to do this, then again, we have to do like this outreach, because it's going to continue to, like, people are going to get stuck at my level, right? They can't get to mid or they're getting stuck right before they get to, you know, past, you know, co-producer. And it's like,
And I think that that's something that I think all of us have talked about in our board campaigns is, you know, is the outreach and the education, and also, you know, the idea of crafting best practices for television hiring, because there's always going to be individual decisions that are made. Mm-hmm. But, you know, saying, like, for the health of the guild, what's important is a pipeline and an experiential ladder where people have the opportunities to go from staff to story editor all the way up to co-EP and eventually executive producer, you know, Those are things that, like, even if the guild, for labor law reasons, apparently, mm-hmm. can't, like, put its foot down and say, you know, your team as a showrunner is a co-EP, a supervising producer, a co-producer, a story editor, you know, like, right. that's too limiting. Right. And, you know, is the guild telling people how to do the hiring? But being like, hey, you know, whatever we get in this contract, your obligation as a showrunner to the welfare of the guild and guild members is a mix of levels. Like, you know, hiring some upper level, some mid level, mm-hmm. some low level, and see what happens.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. Or sorry, just to clarify on what you said, because I know at meetings leadership discussed some sort of stipulation, hopefully, about hiring a certain number of people at each level. Did that fall away?
I think it's still in there, okay. In some way, shape, or form. But it's, I think there's like currently a. It's basically just, are you a staff writer or are you a low level writer producer or are you a writer producer? So I think there's now going to be a staff writer level story editor and executive story editor. And then after that, it's another tier.
An added producer.
An added producer level.
I thought basically. With the minimum room sizes, yeah. I thought there was some sort of like, oh, and you have to hire
I think that is still in there.
Okay.
If it doesn't stay in there and whatever deal, I really hope so. Yeah. You know, but if it doesn't, I still think we owe it to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, literally as it, like the future of the guild, there's yes. so many people that are at our levels. Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, I remember this when we were after the whole George Floyd thing, they were like, oh, we don't have enough BIPOC people at this level. And it's like, well, I'm going to tell you right now, as someone who's been stuck and can't get hired, that like you're going to ask the same question in 3 more years and all the BIPOC yep. people are going to, upper level writers are going to be booked. And you're like, why don't we have any? Because you wouldn't let people get hired. And I'm not blaming mm-hmm. showrunners. Yeah. I'm saying this yep. specifically to the studios. Like yep. when they're looking for these people, it's because you've all been gridlocked and you will not let showrunners hire us. And like, yeah. that's the problem.
That's a thing that like I've sort of been trying to remind people of is like, especially when it comes to historically excluded writers, right? That we were already suffering before the strike mm-hmm. happened. Mm-hmm. The studios were like, yeah, you know, all they're like, hey, no, we're developing. Do you see our diversity numbers? We're developing all these projects with all these like diverse people. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not making any, and a lot of them aren't getting paid
and
for this
development.
We're pulling
them off the platform 3 weeks later.
And we're pulling them off the platform if we do make them. And so they're never going to make residuals or back end or any of those things. But like, see, we're inclusive though. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, like, oh, there's nothing we can do about it, while showrunners are constantly being like, well, I can't afford to bring this person in. Mm-hmm. I can't afford to, you know, whatever. And sometimes that's real. Yeah. Like, sometimes a showrunner is having to check boxes and there's just no room left, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're doing a show where you have Native American and Indigenous characters, you damn well better have those writers in the room. Exactly. So maybe that means you can't hire a staff writer because you had to bring those folks in, mm-hmm. rightly so, right? And so sometimes that's real. Mm-hmm. And it's so frustrating for, it's like, yes, the strike is making people suffer. 100% people are suffering. But the suffering is to fight what was already driving yes. people out of the business.
Yes. Yeah, right.
And like, that's what I just keep trying to remind people is there were already people having to pack up and go because mm-hmm. they couldn't hang in another second.
Yep.
Yeah. People are month to month in this thing. Here's an interesting thing I was just thinking about is, so I said this on my show a few weeks ago. I was like, I think I just watched one of your videos. I don't want to keep talking about your videos.
They're great videos. I share them
with everybody. Amazing. But I was thinking,
he's a strikefluencer.
I was thinking, why don't we do an undercover boss with Zaslav for Iger? Oh my
God. This wasn't on one of my videos.
No,
but I definitely but it saw made this me somewhere. Think I definitely it. Saw this somewhere where someone was like, you know, Bob Iger should like yes. go undercover yes. on the strike lines and like. 5 minutes later, we would have a deal.
Well, there's that. So my point was, no, he's got to start from the bottom on a 40-week show. Because mm-hmm. I want him to yes. experience that real shit. Not that 10-week, oh, I can have 10
weeks. No, go do broadcast procedural.
As a staff writer.
Oh. As a staff
I want him to have to do everything. I want him to get a script and to do the tone meeting and to do everything.
And you don't get to work for Sean Ryan. You have to go work for one of the hard ones.
Yeah.
There you go.
And I want him to have to go, you know, write his episode, produce. I want him to go to set. I want him to do the whole thing. Because you and I both know this bitch is on the set when he comes, sitting at Crafty in a fucking director's chair, chilling.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't doing nothing. I want him to come and have to do the work, right? Then I want him to go to do the post and be like, wait a minute, I'm not being paid for this.
I'm just supposed to sit in this room for 8 hours a day and not get
no windows.
Yeah.
And frame fuck this thing to run time so we can get another 30-second Propecia ad.
You know what I mean? I said, I bet you we will come out of that with them changing their mind on all of this.
Yeah.
All of this.
It is funny because it feels like in the way things have been presented in the media out of these CEOs' mouths, right. They don't know what the fuck we do.
No, they don't.
A whole bunch of them don't even understand what television is anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they clearly are so out of touch to right. like the whole thing that Netflix doesn't care about the fact that people rewatch shows. And it's like, you guys, that's how Netflix got established.
Yes.
Was we all went to rewatch things that we loved. And you had them. And we were like, oh my God, I haven't seen this show in 10 years. I can't wait to watch it again. And then during the pandemic, we were like, I'm going to watch Friday Night Lights again.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, it's crazy to me that they just don't seem to even understand how TV works.
Mm-hmm.
But I do, like, so appreciate the people, like, you know, Jesse Armstrong doing his conversation about Succession. And, like, the reason the show is so good is that the writers are there.
Mm-hmm.
And when something doesn't work, we fix it. And when someone's like, I'm not feeling this, we can adjust it and do all those things. Like, that's why it's important that we're there.
Yeah.
You can tell because the words just roll out of their mouths, like, and they're not easy words to say sometimes. You know what I mean? You know. They really get into that because they made it their own in their own way. You know what I mean? Crazy.
Along the lines of them just not understanding or liking TV, I just something I might be angry about forever, and I don't want everyone to anyone to forget is when Zaslav first took over and they were talking about like what to do with all their networks after this merger. That presentation that went around about how HBO is TV for men and it's lean in TV. That's where their intense stuff goes, and it's not for women. And they like said that out loud.
He also said out loud that Warner Brothers was the greatest creator of content, and I was like, you don't create anything. Nothing.
They acquire.
And it's art, not content.
Exactly. Yeah. Were you saying something, Jackie?
No, I was just gonna say I have a lot of qualms about him, but forever in my head will be him in that commencement speech that he gave with his like 80s villains sunglasses on. And I just like can't with him. I mean, I just wanted to put that out there. Like that's how I'm always going to remember him.
When none of us get a job at Warner Brothers again.
Yeah. It's fine.
I'm so grateful to those students, like the ones who yelled.
Same.
I was thinking about the ones who were sitting there not yelling too, where it's just like, oh.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Let's all not get a job at Disney, because something that happened in this last week is Disney and Charter Cable, like they had a fight.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know,
who won? Who got hit?
TBD.
They put their Vaseline on them.
They got it settled in time for Monday Night Football.
Exactly.
What really matters.
Exactly. Of course.
They did. That is literally what matters. And so there was, it was what, a week and a half where there were no Disney cable channels on a 15 million subscriber cable system.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And one of the results of it is like, Freeform no longer exists on Charter.
Yep.
And I'm like, Freeform 10 years ago was like one of the number one cable networks. Mm-hmm. And just the way that these people
the Fosters,
Pretty Little Liars, like Secret Life of the American
Cloak
Teenager,
and Dagger.
Cloak and Dagger, a Nicole Levy special.
Do you know anything about that one?
A little bit.
You know, like, there were shows that were being made on these, and you know, between carriage fees and advertising, like this was a very profitable business model. And yes, there's a middleman. Like, no one likes dealing with their cable company. You know, there's 1,000 channels that you're like, I don't watch this. Why am I paying for it? Really? And they used that essentially to siphon everything to these streaming platforms, all of the original content, all like to basically say, all of that doesn't matter anymore. And these streaming platforms have different contracts and different values on residuals and all the stuff that we were fighting mm-hmm. for. Mm-hmm. And they knocked, they're in the process of knocking out so much money from this industry mm-hmm. so that they can keep it in house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, you know, one of the things that I hope that the guild pursues more. And we put out like a 16, 17 page document about antitrust. We need to go back to a world where vertical integration is not the norm.
Yeah.
Cause like you look at Amazon, you look at Netflix. Yeah. They are big tech players, but none of them have ever produced as a studio something that aired originally elsewhere.
Hmm.
That is vertical integration. It is bad for consumers and it is bad for creators.
Yeah, it is absolutely. And it's just the, it is the frustration level too of like, we all work. I'm sure a lot of, I feel like we talk about this all the time. No one ever made a show hoping you would hate it.
No.
Right? We all go in there, we work our asses off, we do the best we can. Sometimes the studio gives you notes you can't survive and you just got to make the show anyway and it's going to be bad, but you like, it's your job and you do it. And the idea that we put our blood, sweat, and tears into something that they sold us streaming on the idea that our stuff would be available all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now, like, I went and hunted down a DVD of Cloak and Dagger because I'm afraid that when my nephews are old enough to watch it won't be on a platform.
Yeah.
And, like, that's so upsetting to me. Mm. Like, I never thought about that until this last calendar year. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, my God.
It's like heartbreaking that, you know, Turner and Hooch, I was part of the Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. They got rid of all of our shows. And I'm like, okay, well now I have to race. And they gave us like a week. So I'm like, how am I going to get my episode off of this? Cause it's nowhere else. It was not on any other platform. So I had to figure out ways to get it. You know, I had people help me, but I got that. And then like, again, it doesn't exist anywhere besides the, like, you know, pirated copy that I have for myself.
And as a writer, they didn't give you a screener DVD.
No, they did not. They did not.
No. Oh, I don't even have a DVD copy of The Banker.
Oh, wow.
Like, nope.
Wow.
Because Apple put it directly out to their streaming platform. Mm-hmm. We don't even have a DVD copy of it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's Nicole's, asked about
that's
it.
Nicole's feature movie for those who,
who for the three of y'all who don't know.
Because it was the first one they acquired, right? For the Apple Plus platform. Yeah. And I went to the guild and was like, aren't they supposed to provide me? But mm-hmm. because of how they distributed it, they weren't making DVDs, so they were therefore not obligated to provide us with DVDs.
Interesting.
It's just, and going forward, it's something I'm going to always be thinking about. 4,400. Luckily, I don't know what made me think about it in March. Like, wait. Well, the whole CW thing is a whole other thing. I'm still very angry with them. We never went to it. We didn't know that they were going to get bought. And I think they knew when our show was like airing. That's a whole other thing. And we kept being like, where are we going to stream? Oh, we'll worry about it. And then they got bought. And we're like, wait, we're not going anywhere to stream? So we were just on the website. And then luckily there was a DVD. And I was like, let me buy this DVD because now it's not on their website anymore. Really? So now again, another show I worked on is like, gone.
Yep.
Yeah, I think they took Deadly Class off. I think I heard it's on Netflix International or something. Like, why isn't it here?
Yeah.
Like, it makes no sense.
Or they show up on the fast channels, you know, and it's suddenly like, oh, there this is again. Mm-hmm. You did remind me though of something else that I think, and this feels like we just have to have a conversation with our lawyers at the guild and figure out how to do it. But we need like an official way to list, like, you know, Nicole Levy, co-EP, 8-episode Netflix series unaired.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. So that people get credit for the mini rooms that write that whole shows and
they didn't
don't
get produced.
Go.
100% agree with that.
Because it looks like you don't work for the longest period of time.
My Find a Writer page on the Writers Guild says the last time I worked was iZombie in 2015. I have sold multiple pilots. Exactly. I have been in mini rooms that didn't go forward. I have sold a movie. And I'm like,
I have one credit. I'm like,
yeah, the theoretically, my last credit was my second staff writer thing. And I'm like, I wouldn't be here. I physically, not physically, but like, I could not run for board. I could not be a voting member of this guild if the last time I worked was 8 years ago.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question about healthcare. Because you and I had the same experience where, for those of you who don't know, you get on a show, you get your health insurance, it lasts basically a year. Mm-hmm. And if you don't keep that shit going, bitch, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that happens to a lot of writers where they're all excited and things feel good for a year, and then you didn't get staff for another 2 or 3 years before it came back, or you didn't sell something. And what can we do about that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and it really affects feature writers, because it's the same as the world of TV development, where it's just like, did you sell something or did you not? Like, you've been working your ass off. Right. I think that, SAG has veer into this a little bit. SAG has an issue where, like, they have a lower eligibility level, but only 13% of SAG members qualify for their insurance. True. Our eligibility level is essentially 1 hour-long network drama feed.
Correct.
Like, that will get, even if you are not on staff, one freelance script, LOL, do those exist?
Was it like 10 weeks for a staff writer, and then you finally...
Yeah, something like that, and then you have to wait quarters and stuff.
Right.
I do think that a place that we hopefully can bridge the gap is fighting for guild-covered and dusable... which is a weird word, dusable.
I like it. That's a t-shirt.
There it is. Development work. Like, if you are getting paid, and it is, you know, through a guild contract, even if it's, I'm not going to put a number to it, but like, we're not talking about, you know, your,
it's not big money.
Your scale staffing money, for the fact that you are working, because you are developing something with producers and pitching it to studios or networks, or, you know, especially in a case where you are working with people who are drawing a paycheck because they're in a deal, that can bridge the gap. That could get so many people to keep their health insurance, and then you don't have that added worry, and you can be your best creative self, you know?
Absolutely. And the other thing is, you know, I've had so many people say to me, and look, I'm just going to bring up as a conversation point, because I don't know what the holdup is and why we can't do it. But the amount of people who were like, oh, I want to vote for you, but I just found out I'm in arrears.
Yeah.
Because they didn't get a notice that they were in arrears.
It's crazy.
It's like, you got to tell people that they're behind so that they can fix it.
Yep.
And it's like, you can know how much...
It's your responsibility to do it according to the guild.
And like, if you submit your due statement, right? And they're like, oh no, you actually owe us more money. So you know how much money I made.
Yeah. Okay, then they know.
That would be great.
But you can't just say how much we... Like, somehow we have to modernize this system for the sake of our members, so that things don't fall through the cracks. People don't fall behind and stuff. And then, and it's specifically in terms of the health insurance, one of the things that I don't understand is like, why isn't there an option to just be like, okay, like, here's a payment to keep it going?
Right.
Like, I understand points accumulation and all of that, but like, if I was working a survival job because I couldn't work right now, and I was like, okay, but you know what? I have $5,000 saved up.
Mm-hmm.
And if that'll keep my insurance going, here you go.
Yeah.
So why is that not an option?
I agree.
I don't understand that. And so those are questions that I would have going in.
Well, if one or all of y'all get in, fix that shit.
I don't know if you all were, but just since I'm running this year, I was approached by a group of people, advocating. I think it's called Hollywood CalCare.
I was trying to think of it head, because I've had conversations with them.
Yes,
too.
What is this? What is this? Advocating for, basically just saying that the ways that the WGA advocates for certain political things, and we have our PAC, we should advocate for single-payer health care and universal health care in California. And they included a lot of stats and how popular it is, which I didn't even know. It was something like 80-something percent of Democrats in California believe that this is something we should do, but just like getting mobilized and the political will to do this. But so they brought up, how great our health insurance is in the WGA, but how many of us don't get to keep it or never, mm-hmm. you know, can't get on it. And
the majority.
Yeah. So it's just with like so much of our leverage goes toward in usual bargaining years goes towards keeping our pension and health solvent, and that it would alleviate that. And it's obviously such a long road and a huge complicated thing. But I was afraid to sign on with this organization because I was like, oh, is there a reason like our current leadership isn't supporting it? So I don't want to like I want to go and gather more information before. Mm-hmm. But it like it makes a lot of sense.
You familiar with this, Rob?
I'm going to speculate about why leadership might not currently support it, even though I think probably as individuals, mm-hmm. a lot of them are like, yay, single payer. Mm-hmm. The money that goes, that makes us eligible when we work for healthcare and goes into our pension is a fringe benefit. So it's like on top of what you're getting paid, the company is paying 20-something percent on top of that take-home number into these plans. And so the leadership might be thinking, well, we'd just be saving the studios 15%. Like that money doesn't automatically go into a writer's pocket. And I know that that's like a me versus them or a me versus you thing where, you know, yes, single payer would be great because for all of the people who aren't on healthcare, like it is a safety net. It is a peace of mind and all of that. Part of me just wonders whether that's the reason the guild hasn't signed on, because all it would do for people who are currently on healthcare is save the studios some money.
Yeah. And I will say, like, I spoke with them as well. And, like, I am, as an individual, like, yes, I will vote for that single payer in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But I do think, right, that is a guild-wide conversation.
Yes.
I think there are a lot of people who will feel a very certain kind of way about the idea of their insurance being messed with. And you know, say what, I mean, the healthcare system in this country is bullshit, but I have yet to get turned down to see a doctor for something that I need because our insurance is pretty solid. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think there's a whole conversation to be had, but I mean, as an individual, I am in full support of that.
Same. As an individual, I am too. I think because, and I know specifically now that we've been on strike for as long as we've been, a lot of people are going to be coming to the end of their health insurance because they don't have the. I'm one of those people. Mm-hmm. Because
and during this process, and it doesn't even stop.
Like, it doesn't stop. Yeah, so crazy. You're like, okay, because we would have to wait and negotiate for an extension of this. So in the meantime, you're like, well, I'm gonna probably lose my health insurance, and then hopefully maybe I'll get it back. Like once this is all over, and like who wants to play that game? Mm-hmm. Like that's.
Can we do a quick plug for anyone listening and for people at this table? And something that I didn't know, but we found this out during the captain's meeting on Monday, is that last year California passed basically free covered California for striking workers, and it went into effect in July.
Yes.
So if you are listening to this and you, your health insurance is going to lapse through the guild at the end of September, seek out information on this because you can get for free covered California. Under the ACA, essentially the premiums will be 100% subsidized because of this law.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's actually a webinar coming up for this specifically. They sent to, I think, wide to everyone. Maybe they sent it to people who
I
were
got
there,
it
like,
too. Yeah,
like, so maybe they were like, hey, girl, we know you're about to lose your insurance.
You want
to
keep this quiet.
Jackie, you in danger, girl.
That's exactly
that's why she needs insurance.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're having a webinar specifically for guild members. I believe it's on Tuesday, and they're having someone from this kind of like walk you through it if you're in danger of losing your health insurance.
And by the way, can I tack on to that as a reminder to all the guild members out there, check that statement when they send you the thing about do you have all the credits you're supposed to have? Because not always there.
Yep.
And or sometimes like I thankfully from the work I had already done this year had qualified. But I saw some stuff was missing from my thing. And so I reached out about it. Mm-hmm. And it basically because the studio reported it in one way. And I am billing, you know, I am declaring it in another way. And it was like, and they were like, well, do you have your long form? And I was like, that's cute. Do you know how TV works?
I know.
Yeah. Your long form comes to you 5 years after the show is pulled off of the platform.
Yeah. Exactly. So people are getting into it and it's getting covered. But like, just something as simple as that. Like, if I was worried about qualifying, right? Those were my last two paychecks of the year. Like, that could have been disastrous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So check those statements.
How often do you look at that?
We get them yearly?
I think, like I have tried to make it a practice to go on to the PWGA, your health plan and pension info once a quarter, like during working times, not necessarily during striking times.
Do you also check your residuals and shit like that? Like quarterly or whatever?
I'm going to be honest. I call them. And I'm like, hey, I'm just checking to see how
where my money at, bitch? Where my money at?
But it is so important to check in that these companies, like, even if they've paid you your fee, like, that they are actually contributing to your health eligibility and to your pension plan, because sometimes they don't and they need to be called out on it.
Right.
And the guild will do that when you tell them that it's happening. Because that could be the difference between being on qualifying for another year of healthcare or not.
Yeah.
Or thousands of dollars a month for your pension plan for whenever we're all lucky enough to retire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sort of just piggybacked on that, I just want to say for like anyone out there, if you are like really struggling right now and you need help and you need resources and you're feeling like embarrassed and don't want to say it, like, screw being embarrassed. What matters is that we all get through this in one piece.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that you have a roof over your head and that you have food in your refrigerator. And so if you don't want to go directly to the guild, come to your captains. Yes. Go to someone that you trust and say, hey, I am really struggling right now and let us try to get you help. Yes. Because it's the most upsetting thing to me to know that someone's struggling in silence.
Yep.
And there have been some really great people who have stepped up to do some amazing things. I know Humanitas has done, like, the grocery aid. They've done food bundles. I think they just started doing that for assistants. Joelle Garfunkel, who I love. I adore her. She is a captain at Radford. She's doing the green envelope grocery aid.
Yep.
And she's been doing that for basically anyone. You don't have to be just a writer. But, you know, everyone has been stepping in, trying to help each other as much as they can, because this has been a long time that we've been out here striking, and people are starting to, like, not just starting, but people are hurting. It's been a long road. So.
I did just find out yesterday that I guess that I was told the Entertainment Community Fund assistance, if you're approved, is only $1,500. Mm-hmm. I think I thought it was more than that. I don't know. Luckily, like, between me and my husband, like, we're still far from, like, not being able to pay rent or food, even though obviously this is fucking miserable. But so I don't know. Just hearing that, I think I thought it was much more help was available to people than I thought.
How much do people get for the loan? Is that the same thing?
The Entertainment Community Fund is available to anybody in the industry, and it's a grant.
Yeah. And you can also apply for the strike. They talked about this at the captain's meeting. Mm-hmm. You can apply for the strike fund. And then you just have to be as very specific as possible. If you can't get the strike fund, there is also the good and welfare loan that you can also qualify for. The guild is trying so hard to help as many people as possible apply for the strike fund. And even if you didn't qualify for that, you could qualify for the good and welfare.
Yeah. Yeah, in this captain's meeting, leadership said that, staff member who talked about this said that about 500 people had applied for the strike fund, which means that there are a lot of people out there who are taking survival jobs, you know, instead of doing that. That's your choice to make. And they'd only rejected about 5% of them. Wow. So that's about 25 people out of 500. But they said that the system that was going into place this week was that if you were rejected from the strike fund, you would automatically be considered for the Good and Welfare Fund, which is twice in your lifetime up to a $7,000 loan. That I believe is a 2-year zero interest
I think thing. So. And even then they would work with you if something were to happen.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So, you know, people are taking survival jobs and they're getting to the pickets when they can, because this is dragged on. But there are assistance programs out there, like we've all been saying, and you know, for however long this goes, like we're past the point of shame.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Feel your feelings and seek help when you need it. Like no one is going to judge you.
No.
I was telling somebody the other day, it's like a different comparison, but similar to me, is when you lose someone and you're sad, but you're always like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm crying. I'm like, never say you're sorry. Yeah. It's like the same theory. Like, yeah. This is the one time to be like, I need some help right now. Because, yeah. Bitch, yeah. I ain't worked in 5 months.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I totally
it's
have.
It's okay.
Yeah, I agree, where I realized, like, just the strike in general, the feelings have felt so similar to grief, where it's just like.
It is grief.
Yeah, where I it's just, it's going to be a good day or it's going to be a bad day, and feelings can change really suddenly, right. And just trying to, like, take it as it comes and be gentle with myself, and
No, I didn't even think about it in terms of grief until I went to a independent film festival up in Northern California. Ooh. And one of the things they offered was like a workshop about how we use grief in our writing, and I was sitting there with another friend of mine and I was like, oh my God, this is us. this is literally what the last 6 weeks felt like. It's like mourning like our opportunities, and like, because look, a lot of us, like, I every day wake up and I'm like, please let my show live. It may not, like, that's a reality, right?
Yeah.
Like,
totally,
I don't
understand.
Know. And yeah. So it's like the uncertainty of all that is so real, and like, mm-hmm. people who already had a contract to start a job, is that show still gonna,
yeah.
like, it's
yeah.
so hard to know, yep. because of all the things they're doing. Like, they just canceled the Wonder Years yesterday, yep.
which,
right?
I like, I'm so upset about. It was such a beautiful show, and I'm like, you canceled this show? But then we just don't know what else they're gonna,
I know.
They're gonna do.
And
so.
And because we're on that, in the vein of public shaming, all of you keep your eye out on what shows they are canceling,
yes.
and what series are not going to move
yeah.
forward,
and what yeah. DEI folks they're canceling.
Yes,
yes, yes.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, thank y'all. This was awesome.
Yeah.
Can we loop actually, like, while we're wrapping up, loop back yeah. to the DEI conversation?
Go
because
ahead.
I just want to put something out there. Like, this is not controversial. Don't worry.
Okay.
like, yeah, let's say that things are bad. Hire writers from underrepresented backgrounds.
Thanks. Yes.
Whether or not that background is a character in your
yes.
show.
Amen to that.
Do not only seek out, for, you know, for me, like hiring someone from the LGBTQ+ committee because you have deigned to include a queer person
right.
in your mm-hmm. in your regulars.
Right.
Yes.
You know, like, we can write everything.
Everything.
And everybody has to be able to.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And we've
yeah.
had to exist navigating in a world where we're not the majority of thing, so we already know how to do that.
We
so
know how to do it.
We know yeah. how to do it.
Yeah.
When I signed with my big four agents, I sat there at the table with them, and they're all like, we're going to make you the next ESA. And I was like, great. Just one thing. You know me, Nicole. I was like, do me one favor. Do not just send me on black shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I said, my husband's white. I grew up in a white fucking place.
Same.
I know you bitches.
Yep.
Okay. What do they call it? Over inundated. What's the uninundated? What's the word?
Inundated.
Yeah. We don't have a word in projects. I was like, we are inundated by you motherfuckers.
Yes.
And I said this. You know why the British use this as reference? The British actors and the, like, South Africans and Australians can do our accent so well? Because they are too.
Mm-hmm.
All they see is us. They're like, oh, that accent's easy.
Yep.
You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yep.
Same thing for me. I can write the white motherfuckers just like I can write the black motherfuckers. I'm surprised when y'all can write us really good, though. But when you get it right, I give you fucking props.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So anyway.
No, it's so. Real, though. Like, I had to say to my feature agent, like, I don't even call me about any more black biopics. Like, I am not doing it. I want someone to offer me some other kind of movie.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, I'm going to go write it. But, like, I'm not doing that. Yeah. Like, it, again, and it also plays to me to the snobbery that so many of us who grew up in broadcast television suffered through of the, like, when streaming became, you know, it was so cool and whatever, and it was like, I mean, she's only done broadcast television.
Exactly.
And hilariously now to be at the point
she's
where they're like,
she's a procedural girl.
Yeah.
That's not a sexy credit.
And now they're like, oh, we need someone who's strong at procedural. Do you want to meet on this show? And it's like, yeah, because you forgot that's important. Because if I can solve a crime every week with the same four characters and make you want to keep watching it, I'm good at what I do.
Speak on it. Speak on it. And it's funny, I was just doing a podcast the other day with Tanana Reedu and Steve Barnes, and we were talking about this, and I was talking about how, you know, sometimes you get stuck in that pigeonhole, and Steven said, but I bet the executives believe they can work on that show and that show and that show. I was like, of course they do.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That's funny. Yeah. Well, awesome. Thank y'all.
Thank
Rob.
Thank you.
Jackie. I'll call you Jackie. Jackie.
That's okay. As a kid, I used to watch 227. I know.
Run, that's a nice tribute.
And I, like, my family says that
I got
to
the
me,
video
so
tape.
Good.
I sent you. Jackie, Leah, and of course, Big Sis, Nicole Levy in the building. Y'all know I had the bars like that, did you? Thank y'all for coming.
Thank y'all so much for having
us. Where can people follow y'all? When is... Tell us when everything is over.
I was going to say, yes, WGA please. West members, you have until Tuesday
at noon.
To get your votes in. Please...
Pacific time.
Yes.
Yeah,
please
think
make
of it
sure,
as Monday.
Yes, think of it as Monday. Don't wait till the last minute. Please read people's statements. Like, really and truly, do your like due diligence. Look at everything. But, like, please vote. It's really important that everyone who can vote votes. So...
Yes, absolutely. Where and you, just like, ahead, remember, my feeling is a good turnout's just another way for us to show solidarity, right? That we care about what's happening in our guild. So vote, vote, vote.
Mm-hmm. Where are you at, Nicole? Where can people follow you?
I am at Nicole Cookies, as I have always have to spell it.
She brought me some cookies too, y'all.
I did. It is NICEOLE, Nice Ole Cookies, on Twitter and Twitter, Instagram, and Spoutable.
You got to put some stank on. Nice Ole. You got to do that. Where you at, Rob?
I am at Rob S. For man, F-O-R-M-A-N, and I am for man. No, that's the gay in me. I am never calling it the other thing. It's on Twitter. Like, it's the Staples Center.
It's
not crypto.com.
His mama that. Named him Twitter. That's his name.
I'm a grown-ass man. I'm not saying X. No.
So, Rob S. Foreman on Twitter, on Instagram, and very regrettably on TikTok.
But you make the good videos on there, don't you?
Videos. I don't watch anything, though. It's a problem.
On Twitter, I am JackiePen18. Don't ask me why that's my handle. That's
at least
what
you
it
got
is.
Your name in there.
Yes. And then on Instagram, I'm JLPen2Ns18 on Instagram.
What about you, Leah?
I'm at Leah Folta, LEAHFOLTA at Instagram and Twitter. I'm like a retweet account on Twitter, but I will follow you.
That's all right. Well, thank y'all again. I appreciate it. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter. Well, whatever the fuck it's called.
Twitter. It's still Twitter.
It's still Twitter, right?
Screw that.
I'm in your head now. I'm sorry.
I know. Look. At Hilliard Guest everywhere. Instagram, Facebook, even freaking, I'm about to say Instagram, LinkedIn, all that shit. Just at Hilliard Guest. Because I brand my freaking name, you little childrens. I get on riders all the time. I'm like, why are you rider at such and such? I'm not going to remember you. Put your name in there.
Yep.
Anyway, lots of good shit going on. Please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever you guys listen to. We're all over the world. Shout out to all you guys who always retweet, who post, who buy the t-shirts. We got t-shirts. I always forget that. I never promote that. Shit like that. Chris will be back next week. Please go on screenwritersrr.com. That's where you can get the Patreon page. You can donate to the show because we give this to you for free. So, you know, just $5 million. We don't ask for much. Jackie said she already got
it. Yeah.
She won a lottery last week. Everybody joining me for 2023. Don't ask me why we say it. It just came about. So thank y'all again. Nicole, Leah. Jackie, I'm about to say Jackie again. Jackie and my man Rob in the building. Follow him, telling y'all on Instagram, you learn a lot of game about what's going on in the on the strike. What you gonna do when this damn thing is over?
Delete my accounts.
Big shout out to my man sitting in with us. I always like to give props to writers who come in and sit and listen. Like I said, I'm mentoring this talented writer, Rich Redlow, over here. Thank you for sitting in with us. We appreciate you. He brought us donuts and stuff
thank
like that.
Thank you for the donuts.
And red vines,
they were delicious.
Indeed. Thank you, Rich. Appreciate you, buddy. So everybody joining me, you guys know how we're doing on The Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what? Everybody.
2023.
Okay, now all at once.
You lost your whole black card. On this show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what? Everybody.
2023.
Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel. And I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. Be a rider, well you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the Rant Room, we let that shit up off our chest. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.